All right, Tony Smith, a.k.a. Fat Tony, a.k.a. Fat Vandy, is what I'm calling him this week.
Okay.
Hey, why not? Yeah, that's your squad, man. You wear it on your sleeve.
I do.
Literally, at least in your chest today. The Vanderbilt Commodores going for the College World Series. Jaguars today kicking off. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We did have an occasion to chat with Luke Belenko after the show yesterday. You'll hear that interview coming up. He is, Tony, a dyed-in-the-wool Cavaliers supporter,
yes,
as you would expect, coming out of the University of Virginia.
Yeah, he was excited to at least talk some smack to me yesterday during the interview. I talked it right back, by the way, and here
and then
we go.
He put you through the wall, which was excellent.
Yeah, I'm not going to challenge him to any physical contest regarding the baseball series, but Vandy loses last night, so winner take all game three.
It is on. What's going to happen for you? Can I plan on doing the show solo on Friday? If the unthinkable happens,
could be really bad.
If Vandy loses tonight, is it all made well by the United States advancing to the round of 16, or is it only partially, a salve on your wounds?
It would be a partial salve on the wounds. Look, this is the closest that Vandy's ever been to a national title in a sport that anybody cares about. We have one national title in women's bowling. That is what we have. This is the closest they've been to a men's title in the history of the school. I've been watching my dad suffer for my entire life as a Vanderbilt fan, and this is the closest we've been to having this kind of moment. That being said, it's not like this would be the first time the Team USA has disappointed me either. You can look to just 4 years ago when they lost in the knockout round to start against Ghana in a game that I thought that they could and maybe even should win, and instead we went home in the round of 16. So tomorrow at about 2 o'clock could be really, really low for
me. I'm thinking tomorrow maybe we do our social media wrap-up a little bit early. Because
I have
a feeling you might want to hit the bricks and get on out of
Dodge. I'd like to be sitting somewhere around
you 12. Don't want to sit here with me at Fortunato when the ball kicks off at noon tomorrow?
No, it's all right. If I have to leave a little bit later, I can obviously listen to the game on 92.5 FM.
Oh, look at company man.
Destination and see what's going on with Germany and the US.
Nicely played. You can alternate tomorrow, flipping between 92.5 FM, listening to the broadcast, and then listening to Hacker lose his mind on the other channel, which would be 1010 on the AM dial.
Yeah, I really don't know how it would work out trying to put me on air during a US soccer broadcast. I would be pretty focused in on what was going on that television.
Look, I did a show with Frangie for a while, and I've seen him when he has the Pirates on the screen. I've seen you when you have the Braves on the laptop.
Oh, yeah.
Who are you kidding?
But
over
I don't check out as much for the Braves in a regular season game as I would for the U.S. in a World Cup. That
right.
I can promise you.
It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars today. We will talk about the Houston Texans. We're going to take a look at the division over the next 3 days a little bit, starting with Houston today, Indy tomorrow, and Tennessee on Friday. John McClain from the Chronicle will join us at 11:20 this morning. And, Tony, obviously, the big news, I think, of the offseason is what's going to happen with Andre Johnson, not only holding out from OTAs. Holding out is just a generic term. I'm not, they're voluntary. He's not withholding his services. He doesn't have to show up for those. But missed mandatory minicamp. No word on whether or not the Texans are going to fine him. He, expressed some dismay as to whether or not the team is doing enough to turn it around quickly enough to take advantage of the good years that he feels like he has left. You look at his numbers, he's almost as productive as he's ever been.
Yeah.
Is it really, interestingly enough, for a big physical receiver like him, has never been a big touchdown scorer, but he is a volume catcher, a yardage monster. Jag fans have seen it through the entirety of his career. But right now, you're working with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's been named the starting quarterback there. They didn't elect to go quarterback early. They take Jadeveon Clowney. He's sidelined with, arthroscopic surgery that's holding them out till training camp,
yeah.
I think. And, they draft Tom Savage later in the draft. Not expected to get an instant impact out of that guy. Took him, I think, in the fourth round. So you got a team that was 2-14 last year. I continue to see the national pundits say that they are kind of under the radar because they have a ton of more talent than the record would indicate. I think they have a lot of flaws on that team, too.
No, they definitely have flaws on that team. And this feels like a situation very similar to what the Giants dealt with Michael Strahan as he went into basically the last couple of years of his career, where, look, he didn't want to go to OTAs. He didn't want to have to participate in those practices out in the heat. He barely wanted to participate in training camp, and as a veteran who's been around a team as long as Andre Johnson has and has done as much for Houston as he has done, look, he doesn't need to be there for this time of year. They know that when he comes back, he'll be ready to go. There's no question about, is Andre Johnson going to be ready to play football when we actually get to the fall and it counts. But look, I can understand his frustration too. You're talking about a team that had the number one overall pick in the draft. I get it. I get going with Clowney, but at the same time, if you're Andre Johnson, it's like, what are we doing, guys? Like, seriously, what have I had to play with the entire time I've been here? Can you give me one quarterback that's worth a darn in this league? Matt Schaub is the best that he's had. Matt Schaub is the best of the talent that is Andre Johnson has ever had to work with.
Yeah, Matt Schaub was not chopped liver at his best.
He was okay.
It was okay. I would say at his peak, pushing, I would put Matt Schaub in the upper half.
Top 10 maybe for a year or two.
Yeah, top 10
maybe.
Might even be a stretch.
I mean, but he led the league in passing 1 year.
Right, I mean, in yardage. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that in that system, which was heavily dependent on play action, he could roll the pocket, make big plays down the field, always check down to his tight end and his backs, kept the offense moving. That offense is pretty prolific at times under Matt Schaub. But look, there was nothing out there. You weren't going to get your Peyton Manning in free agency, and you rarely have the opportunity to do that. I think he was looking at it like, look, my side of the football, that's where we need to focus. Ryan Fitzpatrick's not going to be enough to get it done.
Fitzpatrick and Tom Savage.
Right.
I mean, that's how Houston decided to address the quarterback situation.
And we saw what they had in Case Keenum. He looked good in his initial appearance last year, but the final tally, he went 0-8 as a starting quarterback for the Houston Texans. And
look, they can talk about the talent that's on that team all that you want. I mean, if you want to talk about obviously the talent they have on the defensive line with guys like J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney coming in, Brian Cushing is obviously a talented linebacker, but he's hurt all the time. You can talk about all of that, all that you want. In the end, Houston has accomplished nothing in this time where they've had
talent. I agree with you.
And the window has been open for them, and it feels more like the window is slamming shut than that it's staying open. And part of that reason is that they haven't found somebody that can elevate that team playing the most important position on the field, and that is quarterback. So I get the frustration of Andre Johnson because they didn't do anything this offseason to upgrade there either.
All right, we'll get into that a little bit today. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking Jaguar fans what drives you every day. Today, we ask you this question. And I may not have worded it specifically like this, but this is the best as I can tell from my recollection. When you think of players who had their careers cut short, whose careers ended way too young, who's the player that most springs to mind for you? I'm not necessarily talking about Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm talking about anybody in the National Football League. And we've gotten a litany of great responses already that span the gamut, some from the Jags, and some from around the history of the National Football League. So who is it that stands out to you as a guy when you think, here's a guy who got his career cut way too short, who's the guy that pops into mind for you? I know who does for me, and we'll get a sampling of those responses a little bit later on. Luke Belanco, you'll hear our conversation with him coming up in about 25 minutes. A versatile piece, the Jags hope on the offensive line, and being a draft pick, having the ability to play center, those guard positions inside, you think has a pretty good chance to stick around on the final 53-man roster this year. John McClain, Houston Chronicle, joins us. I've also got all the World Cup odds, Tony, on the USA's chances and what they might do against Germany tomorrow, according to the folks in Vegas.
Okay.
So I'll run those by you and let you know. You can let me know what you're comfortable with laying some of your considerable salary down on.
Sure.
As far as that goes. You want to get in today, 641-1010, as always, the phone number to call into Jaguars today. You want to go around the division, we can do that. Allen Robinson getting his contract done with the Jacksonville Jaguars yesterday, leaving only Marquise Lee among a handful of players in the entirety of the National Football League among draft picks to remain unsigned at this point. You can tweet us. And when you do, please use the hashtag Jaguars Today at MB underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and of course at 1010XL Lauren will work as well. And again, 641-1010, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Join the conversation. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday live at Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The Jaguars have a new radio home.
This is our house.
Hornhouse, let's get it rock and roll.
Home of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Why shouldn't it be the Jaguars?
1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Got.
This is Dave Matthews.
Yeah, what you got? I thought for sure we're going to go with, like, all Commodores music for you today. I really thought, you know, if Lauren cared about you, that's where we would go.
Clearly, yeah. I'm evil because
clearly.
I went the opposite direction.
Clearly, the multi-colored toad Lauren Brooks is evil.
Okay, that just sounds horrible.
Well, I mean, it's not your toes, it's your toenails, from what we're told, anyway.
She's gone patriotic.
She has gone all in on the red and the blue. Apparently the white is not part of the color scheme. Red and blue alternating toenails.
That is correct.
Are you going to wear some open-toed shoes tomorrow to watch the game?
I will.
That's the key.
That is the key.
As far as that goes. We got, Lauren, while we're chatting here with you, it's always a good
time morning.
To talk to Lauren. Good morning. How are you?
Wonderful, thanks. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Now, good. Much better now that you're a part of the show today.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Well, we've got to get you to tell this story about your mom's friend, Susan. Because since you told us this, I've been behind the scenes using this little catchphrase for the last 24 hours or so. And
that
I
is
so
true.
I so want to use it on the program. So give us a scoop. I guess your mom's friend Lauren is obviously very proud of you for being on the radio. And so whenever you're on, she endeavors to listen or whenever the show is on. So tell us recently what happened.
So a little while ago, her husband had a knee replacement, and she went to pick him up at the hospital. And he got in the car, and he was telling her about how much pain he was in. And right in the middle of that sentence, one of my updates started. And she gave him a few seconds to figure out what after she turned up the radio, and he didn't figure it out. So finally she said, "Shut up, Randy. Lauren's on."
I don't care about your pain.
Exactly. Right in the middle of, my knee, you know, is so sore.
Go pop some meds, Randy.
I just got out of a wheelchair and all that stuff. So, right, exactly. So thanks to Susan for listening and being so supportive my entire life. She's known me my entire life. So I just wanted to give that story. So now you can start using the phrase, hashtag shut up Randy.
Hashtag shut up Randy. If it has anything to do with Lauren, use the hashtag shut up Randy. And you may be rewarded for that. You know, I'm even thinking in those terms now. You think that the life of a producer, Tony, would be two grueling hours of work a day. You know, because it is grueling putting this show together. But it's way more than that. It's probably close to 2.5-3 grueling hours when you factor in show prep and guest booking. But Lauren, at all, you know, odd hours of the day, will text me and say, "Well, we have so-and-so coming on tomorrow. We have so-and-so coming up next week," or whatever. And now in my mind, every time I get one of those texts, I think, shut up, Randy. Right? Superstar at work here. Back
poor
off.
Randy. Poor he took Randy. The back seat to Lauren.
Oh, Randy now is semi-famous.
Absolutely.
If you can consider it that. So if you know a guy named Randy who's not getting around that quickly.
He's better now.
Is he better now? How long ago was this?
This was a couple months ago.
Oh, it's a while back.
A little while.
Was this on a Jaguars Today broadcast?
That I don't remember exactly.
Oh,
but
all
we're
of a sudden, this is not as important
yes.
as I thought.
We're
going to
say exactly 2 months ago, right when we started.
I would have gone with like 6 weeks ago, Tony, to put it squarely within the time frame.
Sure.
7.5 weeks ago. Exactly.
Of what's going on. All right. Exactly 7.5 weeks ago, Randy was told to shut it. All right. There you go. Lauren Brooks, star of the program, ladies and gentlemen. I think I might be the first time I referred to her as that. That was Donna's old title.
Yeah, it was.
Star of the program. Lauren's getting in good now. It only took 9 weeks to get a little bit of love here. And by the way, in case people are wondering, maybe I'm going to spoil the surprise here.
Oh.
Or maybe you know what? Maybe I'll just wonder, did Broanko get brought up when Luke was in here yesterday?
Talk about a tease.
Yes. You'll find out in about 10 minutes as you'll hear our conversation with the rookie offensive lineman out of the University of Virginia. Coming up today, we will get into, as we said, some Houston Texan talk with John McClain from the Chronicle. Tony, want to take a look at some of these odds and ends to make it for the U.S. to make it out? They're like 5-1 to advance, apparently. So are you feeling confident the United States will at least make it to the round of 16 tomorrow?
I'm nervous. I'm not going to lie. I'm nervous because of how I think the Portugal-Ghana game is going to play out more than anything. I don't think Portugal has much left in the tank, and if they're trying to get out of group, then they have to go hard. I mean, they got to think they got to win that game by 3 goals. So they got to play this wide-open style. Ghana, if they get a one-goal win and USA loses by a goal, especially if it's a if Ghana gets a 2-1 win and USA loses like 1-0, then we're done. I mean, that's how simple the scenario is for Team USA. And the way that I think Portugal has to play, I think Ghana's going to win that game. USA needs to get a draw against Germany if they plan on playing in the round.
But if they lose, if they both lose 2-1, for instance,
yeah,
then the USA goes on.
USA scores the goal, we're in pretty good shape.
They got to be outscored by 2 by Ghana. If Ghana wins and the USA loses,
right?
They need about
USA scores the goal, we're in pretty good shape.
All right. I'll say this in terms of Portugal. Portugal didn't quit at the end when they really had to know they basically had no chance to win that game. And I guess their World Cup chances were still technically alive at that point in time. But they played hard to the final minute, so maybe they'll have some pride and continue to play hard. By the way, Deadspin kind of debunked the whole Ronaldo haircut.
Did they?
Well, a little, they said, for one thing, apparently the kid who's whose surgery or procedure, whatever it is, that Ronaldo paid for with cancer, I think it was, did not have a brain tumor. And that was the story, that the kid had a brain tumor, it was operated on, and he had this big, jagged scar on the side of his head.
It
and
was
that,
dysphagia. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't either. But apparently, there were some parts of the story that were factually incorrect, and Deadspin thinks it's more of an urban legend than actual fact. Either way, good
How
PR.
About
Good PR for your boy Ronaldo, as far as that goes, to get a little bit of love. Allen Robinson signs his contract yesterday. It's just good, I think, to have it done at this point in time. It's not a big deal. I mean, look, by the time they come back to training camp, that's the only time it's going to be a big deal if Marquise Lee is not signed on the dotted line. Initially, I think we had heard some indications here in the building that by the end of last week, they were going to have everybody done. And then as kind of the week began, you heard, well, it's not moving as quickly as they anticipated. I don't get any sense, though, right now, really anywhere in the National Football League. Kind of like what Jeff Prosser said, there's really no news to it anymore when these guys sign the contracts.
No, there really isn't, because of the slotted system now with the rookies. You expect them to all get in generally before the end of OTAs at this point in the National Football League. We're down to half a dozen guys that
haven't
signed.
Would the Bears take a week to do their entire class?
Yeah.
Basically?
Yeah.
Is it close to a week?
Is that how long it took? So Marquise Lee not being signed is a little bit of a surprise, but it's not trouble by any means. You would think that sometime in the next 4.5 weeks, they're going to get it done. He'll be signed by the time training camp starts. It's really not a big deal anymore, and it used to be. It used to be you'd sign your fourth-round pick, and you're like, all right, we got this guy in, one less guy to worry about. And now it's almost the end of June. Come on. What are we waiting on the last guy for?
You know, not to be a pessimist here, but honestly, the big concern with those two guys is where their physical condition is going to be. Will any of the injuries they suffered linger whatsoever? And I'm still a little in the dark on exactly how Marquise Lee hurt the ankle, because you know, he pops up on a Monday with a boot on. This is the Monday after they went to the rookie premiere out in Los Angeles, he and Allen Robinson and Blake Bortles, and we're told, you know, that it happened during practice the previous week, although there was no indication that anything happened. But you know, as long as it is precautionary, as long as they're just taking it with baby steps in terms of the rehab for that kind of thing, because now's not the important time. But, you know, ankles and hamstrings are both things that can linger. And if you've got any remnant of that injury that's not 100% healed, I would imagine some of the more susceptible to being re-aggravated. Certainly we've seen that with hamstrings over the year. Guys come back and, you know, you think, boy, they come back in 3 weeks or whatever the case, and invariably they pull it again, maybe halfway into the game. So that's the great shame if those guys aren't able to get off to a running start, I think, when training camp starts.
Well, with hamstrings, what you'll see guys come back and not only get re-injured a lot, but you also see they're not as explosive as they were before that injury, because it's still there. It's that's the kind of injury that doesn't heal quickly or maybe even completely when you have to go through football activities. So for a guy like Allen Robinson, who's basically been on the shelf now for the last 3 weeks because of a minor hamstring injury is what they called it, he gets another 4.5, 5 weeks now where he's not going to be doing any of this stuff or doesn't have to. Look, that's 8 weeks. That's 2 months where he's not doing anything on that hamstring, and you would think that he should be fine coming back from that. I agree with you on the ankle with Marquise Lee. I don't know where it came from. He had the wrist injury when he left to go to the rookie deal right out in California and came back on Monday, and it was an ankle. And we were all like, well, what happened with the ankle? And they're like, oh, he injured it last week. Okay. When?
When did you, yeah. Didn't hear about that.
We didn't hear about the ankle injury. But, look, he should be okay, too, you would think, by the time they get back. I'm less concerned because of the amount of time that Allen Robinson's going to have between the time that he had the injury.
A ton of time.
And when training camp is actually going to start, about that kind of hamstring injury. If he had done it the first week of training camp, that's trouble.
Who's more important to this team this year? I know we've talked about, we've asked fans to weigh in on who will have a bigger impact this year, but who is more important for this football team?
Between those two guys?
Between those two guys.
Man.
I tend to say Allen Robinson because he provides you with something that you don't have, you know, in terms of that big-bodied wide receiver who could still run a little bit. But clearly, Marquise Lee, no matter what you think, no matter, you know, we saw a brief glimmer of Allen Robinson with the rookie minicamp and the beginning of OTAs, but they took Marquise Lee first. And I know they said it was a debate between those two. The one they risked losing out on was Robinson. I do think when you look at Marquise Lee's body of work and what he was able to do at USC, his last year notwithstanding as a sophomore was maybe the best receiver in the country.
I
think he gives you a lot of after-the-catch ability that they haven't had in a while.
Look, for a team that we've talked about the offensive line and the idea that we like some of the pieces that are there, but we don't know how it's going to look when it comes together. When you look at Mercedes Lewis, who has been underwhelming for the most part for the last 2 or 3 years, had a really good last month of the season last year with Chad Henne, and you hope that momentum carries over. You look at Toby Gerhart getting a chance to be a starting running back in the National Football League for the first time, and there are still questions about how much is this team going to be able to score. And if you ask me which is the more dangerous option between Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson from that perspective, I think it's Marquise Lee. He's more of a big play guy, a make-you-miss type wide receiver that can turn something small into an explosive play than Allen Robinson, at least based on what we've seen from their college days. Now, whether that translates to the NFL or not, so given that, and given my questions about how much I think this team can score right now, Marquise Lee is probably the more important of the two players, but Allen Robinson gives them something they haven't had, size at wide receiver, and another option down on the goal line besides Mercedes Lewis to just throw the ball up and let him go rebound, basically. Allen Robinson has that ability. We haven't had a chance to see it yet throughout camp because he's been hurt and just hasn't had a chance to play that kind of role for them yet, even in practice. But I think Marquise Lee, because of how explosive he potentially is the more important piece.
Ultimately, the answer is they're both critically important.
They are.
If this team is not just going to be satisfactory at the position, you need to be deeper. I mean, you look at a team like Green Bay, right? And they've been building it for a while, but Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, they lose James Jones. They have Jared Boykin step in. They draft a couple more wide receivers, including Devontae Adams, who was Derek Carr's main target at Fresno State. They spend a third-round pick on a tight end because JerMichael Finley is hurt, his status even returning to the NFL unknown at this point in time. And they pick up Colt Lierla, the rookie out of Oregon, who fell through the draft because he had drug issues when he was in college. But, I mean, that's a team that is potentially, legitimately, like seven deep in terms of playmaking, pass catchers, not to mention Eddie Lacy in the backfield. That's where you ultimately want to get to. You hope that between Robinson and Shorts and Lee in no particular order and some combination with Denard Robinson catching balls out of the backfield, if Mercedes Lewis can return to his double-digit touchdown form of a few years ago, then you're starting to scrape together the semblance of a more diversified passing attack.
Yeah, they're better off at that position than they have been in a long time. And they draft Justin Blackmon a couple years ago, and we thought, okay, that's the piece this team was missing. And look, Blackmon is a dynamic playmaker, obviously not on the field for the Jags right now, so they address it again this year. And when you look at it, we've talked about the competition at that spot on the roster. if they're going to keep five or six guys and what it's going to look like on the back end of the depth chart at wide receiver with Shorts and Robinson and Lee up top. I like Mike Brown. I like what he gives him at the wide receiver position and how much he understands the game and is kind of that coach on the field. I think he flashed a little bit for me, especially in the second half of last season. I like Ace Sanders in the slot. I think he can be a playmaker for this team if put in the right situations and not overused like they had to last year with him. And Allen Hurns, look, we'll see with that sixth wide receiver spot who they want to keep in that kind of position. But they're so much better than they were just a couple years ago when they're running guys out like Jarrett Dillard and that kind of thing. I mean, how much better they are at wide receiver is crazy compared to where this team was just 3 years ago.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially. Absolutely. All right. We'll take a time out here. We'll come back. Our conversation with Luke Bowanko. Half of the Bowanko combo,
yep.
I ask, question mark. We'll get into his first few weeks here as a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars, what it's been like, and what he thinks the season has in store for him. Plus, a little Vandy Virginia smack talk, College World Series championship game tonight. Luke Bowanko, Jaguar rookie, coming up next. This is Jaguars Today, live from Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
This is Fred Taylor.
I'm Bill Polian.
This is Daryl Johnston.
1010XL is the hottest radio on the planet.
1010XL.
1010XL.
92.5 FM.
All right, catching up with some of the Jag rookies before they head off on hiatus for a few weeks. Luke Bowanko here with us. A versatile, multifaceted interior offensive lineman. How about that for an introduction? Not bad, right?
What was that, $10?
That'll be $10. And as soon as we auction off the helmet that you signed for us a few minutes ago, we'll take our cut out of that. How are things, man? How did it go for you? Since draft day through now, been a whirlwind or what? What's it been like?
Yeah, I mean, the first couple weeks were definitely like my head was spinning, but it slowed down a little bit, and you kind of get into the swing of things, you get in a routine, and they did a great job of making us feel like comfortable and at home, and made sure that we had, you know, a daily schedule that you can basically fall into. And at this point, it's just football. I mean, you know, football doesn't really change wherever you go. It's just the competition changes and expectations. But no, it's been a lot of fun, that's for sure.
What's been the most eye-opening thing for you thus far? A lot of people talk about the speed of the game. You're in non-contact drills on the offensive line. Has that really been the difference, how fast these guys can get on you?
Yeah, I mean, they're bigger, they're faster, they're smarter. They're in their playbooks like, you know, college guys just don't have the time really to be. And it's a little bit of a learning curve, you know, to be able to – you got to train like a professional. And that's definitely – I mean, you can say it, but it's definitely like a realistic, you know, obstacle that you have to face. But yeah, the guys are big and they know what they're doing, so it's easier for them to play faster, and you can definitely tell.
We look at you and we think versatility, you know, all kidding aside, you can play several positions on the offensive line, is going to be your attribute that you bring to this team as you're, you know, vying for a roster spot. What does the team talk to you? Gus is big on the vision. What's his vision for you in fitting in with this football team?
Individually, I mean, you know, the only thing we're really worried about, as I'm sure you've heard over and over again, is getting better. And thankfully at center, it's like kind of like a cross train. You don't really work right or left. So you kind of work both in, you know, into what you're doing. So as long as I'm playing, you know, center, guard, whatever it may be, it's just offensive line's offensive line. And, you know, wherever, you know, I may fit in or wherever they may need some help, then that's where I fit in. But as far as my vision is just to get better, keep getting stronger, keep getting faster, and be able to contribute.
Straight out of the book of Bradley, Tom. Yeah. Right there.
Is there a player or two on the offensive line, a teammate or two, that has helped you out to this point?
Yeah, I mean, Austin Pastor is definitely like, I mean, I've been playing ball with him for a couple of years now back at Virginia and obviously here. So, you know, he's kind of taking me under his wing a bit. I'm living with him right now, and, you know, he's feeding me, making sure I'm out the door on time. He's kind of like my surrogate father, but no, it's been awesome to have him there. My locker's right next to him. He can kind of talk me off the ledge after a good practice and talk me down from, you know, my good after my bad practice.
Pro Bowl, baby! I'm going to the Pro Bowl.
Right. He smacked me upside the head a little bit.
Last time I talked to Austin, he talked a little smack. I asked him, like, you know, what does he enjoy doing away from the field? He said video games, especially FIFA, and said he owned you.
Yeah.
What he told me.
Yeah. That's one of those tall tales that you just kind of have to listen to.
Wasn't sure if he was going for a continued free rent here or not. He's not going to play it like that.
No, I'll play it hardball, man. I mean, Austin, you know, he'll get one every now and then, but it's usually like after I beat him a couple times and I'm feeling bad. I want to keep playing and like, he wants to quit because, you know, he's kind of taking on the chin. I'll let him get one and every now and then, but don't believe, you know, don't listen to him.
Now, the miracle of radio, we're actually talking to you before Vandy and Virginia play game two of the College World Series.
By the time we play this tomorrow, it's going to be pointless.
He's already in your face over here with the Commodore love, Luke. Does that even move the dial for you? I mean, you follow all UVA sports. You care about the College World Series?
I'm like number one mega fan for UVA.
Are you? It's okay.
Like, yeah, everything, whatever they're doing. It was women's tennis this year, win national championship, individual national championship. Now it's baseball. We're going to win the national championship. I mean, we had a little charity second inning there. You know, we write that off, maybe get a little tax deduction.
Nine runs was just enough, Luke.
nine runs. Look at that. They get nine runs. At one point, it was like 10 hits. You know, we had 10 hits. They had three. They had nine runs. We had two. It was like, it was just surreal. But we haven't given up nine runs all year. We're not going to. I mean,
just avoid that one big inning, and you can beat the Commodores.
It was big.
That's the book on that, dude, those Vandy guys.
It was big inning.
I'm worried that we might have used all our hits up in the comeback and then, you know, to fall short. I'm like, guys, just lose by nine. Save them for tomorrow. But, no, I mean, it's a lot of fun. College baseball is a lot of fun. It's a different game, obviously. There's a lot more small ball going on and a lot more theatrics with, you know, how much those guys care. And, just a short three-game series, but yeah, we'll take them down here tonight and hopefully wrap it up tomorrow.
I'm the second biggest Virginia fan right now because I don't need to hear. I mean, just to put up with this, what it's going to be like. You know what? The Vanderbilt's won one title. It's in women's bowling, and that's honestly
it's the only title we've ever won in school history.
Don't want to hear that.
Women's bowling.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Great work.
That ends tonight. Tonight we get the baseball title. Look, how much do you feel like you can get done? You know, we're in these non-contact OTAs. You go through 5 weeks of that. How much can you get done, work on as an offensive lineman when you're not really able to get after a guy?
There's a ton of work to get done out there. I mean, we do, you know, unbelievable amount of individual work that you really just break it down into little small increments, and you're like, what do I need to do today? Oh, we're doing that drill, then I can definitely get better at my first step or my punch or whatever it might be. So there's a lot of work that, I mean, I'm 10 times the football player that I was just 5 weeks ago. I mean, just being with the guys at a higher level, just living up to their expectation of what, you know, you bring to the team. And then the mental aspect of being able to know the plays, know the corrections, know, you know, the in-game adjustments, in-play adjustments when they're bringing safeties down and all that stuff. Playing 10 times faster and, you know, it's just a confidence thing. You get out there, you mess around a little bit, knock your heads into somebody, you're a little more confident than you were 5 weeks ago. So it makes a huge difference.
Jaguar rookie Luke Bolanco here with us. Who was the best defensive lineman you went up against in college?
College? It was probably, I got this question a lot during like the, you know, the draft, lead up to the draft, and it was probably one of my college teammates, Brent Urban, who went, I think, third, fourth round to the Ravens. But when he was healthy, he was like, he's 6'7", he's got long arms, like, you know, arms of a monkey. And he's strong as hell. I mean, this is a guy that plays with great leverage, and if he gets his hands on you, it's like, you know, it's like the little kid with, you're just kind of reaching for him and you got no chance. But, with his size and athleticism, it was like, he was like the, you know, perfect, adequate D lineman.
For OTAs, it's non-contact stuff, so you really can't get the full sense. But, who on the Jaguar defensive line kind of jumped out at you in drills?
It's funny because, you know, when you're a rookie, you're just kind of going in there and you're so worried about, oh, what's the snap count? What's this play again? Like, where do I go, right or left? And, you know, at times it was just guys over there that I was just, like, trying to get in front of and,
right,
you know, not trying to mess up too bad. But, you know, as it got going, there's a lot of, you know, great players over there. And they had some injuries and some guys, you know, veteran guys weren't getting as many reps. But guys like Jordan Miller, Ziggy Hood, they're all, like, really great athletes and, you know what they're doing, and you know, pose a pretty good challenge.
Veterans figure out how to get those well-timed summer injuries.
No,
you know,
you're
going to need a slow day today, Coach.
What do you do in the downtime, Luke? I think I saw you at 22 Jump Street last week. Were you one of the boys that was over there?
Yeah, I checked it out.
There were four or five of them. They were all spread out. They don't sit next to each other because they're too big.
Not because this is what dudes do when you go to the movies.
They take up the whole row.
Two seats at least. Come
on. But what do you do in the downtime, and what did you think of 22 Jump Street?
22 Jump Street, man. What an absurd movie. I mean, the first one was awesome. The first one was just awesome. And then the second one, like, they literally, I don't, was there a plot? I'm still not sure.
There was the Wi-Fi, I guess.
It was so funny. I mean, yeah. it was a hysterical movie, but I don't think there was any point to the entire thing. No, but during the downtime, I don't know. I mean, like, it's my first time off, really, in, you know, a month and a half. But I'll go home, spend some time with the family, maybe get out with some friends I haven't seen in a while, but... you know, there's a lot of work still to be done, especially, you know, after doing those OTAs and the mini camp and all that. It's eye-opening. You're kind of like, wow, I need to work on this a little bit. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I can use that time, you know, to improve on some things.
By the way, I'm not stalking you, I promise. I just happen to show up in the same chunk
on Thursday, July.
At exactly
7 p.m.? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, but Luke on Twitter, at LBOW70, LBOW70. And looking at your Twitter feed, I told you earlier, you look like you're kind of a bit of an outdoorsman, right? Jeff Logman is the resident redneck in the building who will, and I say that in the most positive way. If you needed to survive, Logman's probably the guy to team up with.
He's towards the top of the list.
What do you like to do? Hunt, fish? What are you into?
Yeah, zombie apocalypse, right? Call Logman.
Logman would be good in the zombie apocalypse, no question.
No, I'm kind of a wannabe outdoorsman. I mean, like, all my friends are all about it, and I'll hang out with them a little bit, but... you know, I'll fish, I'll hunt, I'll do all of it, but I don't know what the heck I'm doing.
I gotcha.
So I stick my, like I was telling you, I stick my head in there when him and Linda are going back and forth, you know, what tackle they're using, you know, out off the shore, you know, whatever. I'm like, can I come? I just want to catch something. I don't know what the heck.
I'm going to bring my fishing pole. I don't know about what kind of test line I've got going there.
Exactly, exactly. But no, it's fun. I go out, you know, up in Virginia, you'd be able to go out and, you know, do some target practice and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun to get out, but... Yeah, I don't know what the heck I'm doing.
All right, well, that fit right in with this.
All right,
I'll tell you that much. All right, Luke, we appreciate you stopping by. Glad things went well for you, it seems, throughout mini camps and OTAs. Enjoy a little bit of downtime because, as we've been talking with all the rookies this week, really since the start of last season, probably been on the go most of the time getting ready for the draft and all that stuff. So enjoy it, man, because the work only gets harder when training camp gets here.
No doubt. Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right, Luke Bowanko of your Jacksonville Jaguars here with us on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Always epic, always worth the price of admission. It is this date in football history, Tony. It's brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. This is kind of what got me thinking about today's online social media question of the day, which is basically when you think about NFL players whose careers ended way too soon, who do you think of? Didn't want to make it any more morbid than that. That's bad enough when a guy has his career cut short, typically due to injury, sometimes of his own volition. A lot of people have voted on people who walked away from the game at an early age, but it was this date in 1992 when Jerome Brown, former Philadelphia Eagle, former Miami Hurricane, dominant defensive lineman, passed away in a car accident, or following a car accident, along with his 12-year-old nephew. I didn't remember the details of this case that much. He drove into a utility pole. He was driving his Corvette at a high rate of speed and crashed his car, and I believe a one-car accident, if I'm not mistaken at the time, but killed his 12-year-old nephew. You know, and... You hear all this, oh, Jerome Brown, it's such a tragedy, it's such a tragedy. The 12-year-old nephew is the tragedy. I mean, look, I'm not, Jerome Brown, wish no ill on him. Not everyone who speeds deserves to die. But when you're a grown adult and you get behind the wheel of your sports car and you decide to drive too fast, bad things happen sometimes. Why you would think that would be a thing you should do with a 12-year-old in the vehicle? Maybe I'm just getting old, dude, but that just bugs me a little bit.
No, I could understand where that bugs you. Also today, by the way, in football history.
Yes.
This one might have not been listed on that site. Marcus Stroud turns 36 today.
Happy birthday, big baby. 36 years young, dude.
Yeah.
A lot of guys who play his position, maybe not a lot, but there are guys that play defensive tackle that continue to play in the National Football League. We had Marcus on not too long ago, back on the previous variation of the show we did in the afternoon here. It wasn't that long. Probably, I'd say four or five months ago, something like that.
Yeah, he was promoting the gospel festival he had.
Did he do Dream 18 with Brent Martineau this time around?
He did.
I think he might have as well. And I believe, talking to Marcus, the golf game is probably more in our category than it's in Martineau's category.
Could be.
I did not see that. Happy birthday to Marcus Stroud out there. Also, it was on this date in 1985 when ABC announced their new Monday Night Football booth, which would be Frank Gifford, Joe Namath, and O.J. Simpson teaming up, the trio in the booth.
Wow.
It's just anything. I mean, well, those are, honestly, you think back in the history of the National Football League, like we were talking about yesterday, how many kids, when we brought up Ralph Sampson, I don't even remember what the context was, and Lauren said, a bunch of people Googling Ralph Sampson right now to find out who he was, and I hope that's not the case, but as a kid growing up, I didn't know Frank Gifford played football. You know, I mean, like, I pieced it together over the years, but when you first heard it, you're like, all right, this guy's an announcer. And I think when you're young and you first start watching a sport, you just assume that's what the guy does. He's an announcer. And Frank Gifford was, what did he play for the Giants? Was he?
He was a little bit of everything.
Like a running back, though?
That was back when you played both sides of the ball. But
right.
He played halfback, some fullback for him. I think he played even some wide receiver and defensive back for the New York Giants.
Hall of Famer, right?
Yes.
I mean, considered probably one of the greatest players to ever play in the National Football League, certainly up until the point that he played in his career. Then you got Namath, who is, you could argue, the most pivotal single figure. Pivotal? Did I say that right? Yeah, I did.
You did.
Pivotal single figure in NFL history in terms of a player, right? Because it was not only the Jets winning that game, but it was the attendant hype that came with Namath guaranteeing the victory in Super Bowl III, the fact that he played in the largest media market, and, you know, the Jets. It was probably inevitable that the AFL would beat the NFL in a championship game, and the leagues would eventually merge. But that really was the moment that kind of forced that upon us. He's a Hall of Famer. He is, by the way, and his career, you look at his numbers, they're not Hall of Fame-worthy numbers. He's in the Hall of Fame, I think, more for his contribution and his overall presence in the game. But he was the first 4,000-yard passer in a single season in the National Football League. And, of course, O.J.'s first 2,000-yard rusher. We've been talking a lot about him because it's been a lot of 20-year anniversaries for him associated with the murders in Brentwood back in the 90s.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Joe Namath, I'm fine with a guy like Joe Namath being in the Hall of Fame. I don't think it always has to be about the numbers. I think there is something to be said for a guy who contributed something to football the way Joe Namath did.
Right, if it's strictly on the numbers, though, Joe Namath may be the least deserving Hall of Famer there is.
Could be. He could
among
very
them.
Well be. But for a guy to call his shot at a Super Bowl where nobody really thought he had a chance, the personality that he had, I mean, he was bigger than the game of football. I'm okay with guys like that getting in, even if the numbers don't necessarily warrant it. They deserve to be remembered for all of time for what they contributed to a game. I'm cool with that.
I have contended for years that Doug Flutie belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Keep in mind, it's not the National Football League Hall of Fame. It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, and his contributions to the game of football, period. If there was an overall football Hall of Fame, I don't know, if there were, truly, Tony, if there was a football Hall of Fame that encompassed everything equally and factored in the Canadian League, the NFL, college ball, the USFL, you know, all the premier secondary leagues that have popped up over the years, would Doug Flutie, I may be selling him short, would he be one of the 25 most pivotal figures in football history? Certainly a memorable, I mean, his career in Canada was almost unmatched. Now, he and Warren Moon and a handful of others were among the greatest quarterbacks to ever play in Canada. And certainly one of the most fondly remembered Heisman Trophy winners in all of college history.
Sure, I mean, he's one of the, Doug Flutie is a brand. With what he did in football,
yeah, I agree with that.
He's almost a brand. And it didn't matter whether he was doing it in college, with the memories we all have of what he did during his time in college in the Heisman Trophy, like you said, or how prolific he was in the Canadian Football League. And when he came to the NFL, he was pretty good here, too. I mean, Doug Flutie achieved success on every level, and because of his size, he became a fan favorite wherever he went. The size and personality that he had, I mean, it was crazy. It was my first chance to talk to him this year at the Super Bowl when he came over and sat down with us for about 10 minutes. It was my first chance to talk to him. And look, there is something different when a guy like Doug Flutie comes around than a lot of the guys that we even get the chance to talk to in a room like you have at the Super Bowl. It's different around that type of guy. And I think there is something to be said for considering everything when it comes to the Hall of Fame, instead of just saying, well, these are the numbers that he put up in the National Football League. It can be bigger than that.
Yeah, and I think in his case, it should be. But whatever, it's not something I'm going to lose any sleep over. It was striking, I thought, when we talked to Doug Flutie, as you mentioned, on Radio Row, how it bothers him to this day the way he really doesn't feel like he got the full shake in the National Football League, but particularly being benched for Rob Johnson. Remember that? The Music City Miracle, which ultimately led the Titans, you know, their comeback led them going on the road to win the Super Bowl, or go to the Super Bowl. That's a year in 1999 when they beat Jacksonville three times. We get it. But, you know, Rob Johnson put him in position to win that football game, and really with a, I don't know if it was a field goal drive or a touchdown drive, but he set up the winning score, and they had just, probably a field goal, they had just enough time to return the kickoff, and of course, Wycheck to Kevin Dyson. We may have Wycheck on later this week. I'm not sure who we're going to have on talking about the Tennessee Titans. By the way, John McClain, Houston Chronicle, coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes. We'll get into the Texans all season at this point. This date in football history was brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're located here on Gate Parkway. And if you need a family dentist, maybe you need some cosmetic work done, you've been putting it off, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. Mention that you've been hearing about them on the show. They've got a 10% discount for all first-time customer initial visits. Maybe you just want to go in, get your teeth clean, check out the place. They're a certified Invisalign provider. And in the meantime, you can check out jamesjmccall.com, get a complete list of comprehensive care services there. Before I forget, because I've already forgotten a couple of times, mentioned Clowney offhand. I couldn't remember. I said arthroscopic surgery. And Andrew Gibson, Agent Gibbs, who texted us earlier, reminded us that it was a sports hernia situation for Jadeveon Clowney that he is dealing with right now. But you wonder, I mean, all the hype about Jadeveon Clowney, you hope the same case with him. You hope, for his sake at least, I'm sure Jaguar fans are not hoping good for anything for the Houston Texans, but you hope for his sake that that's not one of those things that lingers or he has a chance to re-aggravate, that it heals, because, I mean, you think about that, out of sight, out of mind, man. That's just the National Football League.
No doubt.
And, you know, the Jags look like they're kind of redshirting Blake Bortles by choice, or at least hoping to. That is not the plan for the Houston Texans. They need immediate impact out of Jadeveon Clowney. So we'll find out from John McClain coming up as to whether or not he feels like he'll be ready for training camp, exactly what the timetable is. We have John on the line, Warren. Is that what I'm seeing here correctly? 641-1010. John the Baptist has joined us here on Jaguars today, bringing good tidings. What's up, John? How are you?
What's going on, my brothers? How y'all holding up?
We're fantastic, man. What can we do for you?
Man, I just wanted to give a quick little piece of my mind here on this brother that the Jaguars signed, wide receiver, not Marquise Lee now, not Allen Robinson, but this other boy from West Texas A&M named Nathan Slaughter. Man, I think that brother is going to have some potential on this team and at the next level in the NFL. The boy can just run. He almost in some ways kind of has Denard Robinson speed, but with like great hands. And even Denard has picked up his hands this year in the training camp, what I saw when I went out there. Nathan Slaughter is going to be a gem to watch this year.
Now when you say that, do you have a connection to him, or do you know the guy? Are you a West Texas A&M alum? What makes you single him out?
Well, what makes me single him out is, you know, I was looking through the Jaguars website, you know, and I was seeing that they reached receivers, you know, not only with Allen Robinson, because I know that we really struggled on that last year. Now it's just, you know, I'm just a fan here. I'm just looking at the website.
That's cool. I was just curious why you were ended up focusing in on him.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, he's not a big name, you know, and they say they're always trying to make competition. Well, they're definitely making it, because this guy can catch, and he can, man, when I say he can run, like, check out some of his YouTube stuff. He can run, bro.
All right, John the Baptist. I'll say this, Tony. A lot of these guys are going to have an uphill climb to make an impression, make the roster. I mean, practice squad for a lot of these guys is going to be the best that they can hope for. You have to feel, well, obviously, Shorts, Robinson, Lee, mortal locks to make the roster.
Yeah.
No matter what, they could drop every pass thrown their way in training camp, and those guys are going to be on the roster, and they're not going to drop every pass. Mike Brown, because of his experience and his versatility, seems to maybe not be a mortal lock, but he's trending in the right direction. We both think Ace Sanders, and according to what Ryan O'Halloran said about the coaching staff's reaction to him suggesting that Ace was in trouble for making this roster, seems pretty safe as well.
Sure.
Which probably leaves one spot that you're looking at. Right now, you know, a lot of people focusing in on Allen Hurns, Kerry Taylor. I thought, in terms of volume, made the most of the opportunities of these guys being out of anybody. I don't know if he's gives you a special attribute. That's kind of the knock on Hurns. There was no one special trait that he brought with him, but he just seems like a good, solid, all-around guy. Catches, runs well enough, pretty good route runner, reliable, made plays down the field. There's nothing eye-popping about him, but it's going to take a lot, I think, for Slaughter to stand out.
Probably it will, but here's the conversation about wide receiver. Like you said, the top three on the depth chart are locked in. Those guys are going to be here. I think Ace Sanders is going to be here because they want to use him as their primary punt returner at this point. Especially having not seen Tannen Doss, but that's kind of the point with the bottom half of the wide receiver depth chart is it's as much about what you can offer the team in special teams, especially that sixth spot on the depth chart, and we haven't seen that yet. They aren't running contact drills with special teams, anything during the OTAs or any of that, so we don't know how much Hurns helps them from that perspective, and that's something
right.
that he needs to be able to give them something with that six wide receiver spot. So maybe Slaughter can. We haven't seen what these guys can offer the team as far as special teams. It's at that kind of position on the depth chart, it's not all about how good or bad a receiver they necessarily are. It's about what they can offer the team, because the number six wide receiver isn't going to play wide receiver as much as they're going to be covering kicks and punts and that kind of thing. So you have to see what they're actually going to offer you on game day. And look, during a passing camp, Hurns look good. Now we'll see when they put the pads on if he can offer them something else besides that he looks like a pretty good receiver.
All right, again, a guy like Nathan Slaughter, practice squad would be not miraculous, that would be phenomenal for him to be able to stick around, continue to work with a professional team, and, you know, look, 5'9", tiny little guy. You better be able to fly. There are a lot of guys that can run fast. And at 5'9", you better do a lot that can stand out. And I guess, you know, you could say the same for Ace Sanders. He's got to be better than he was in the return game, if that's where he's going to make his mark. But I think, again, we beat that one to the ground a little bit. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. For all size plumbing jobs, whether it's residential, commercial, industrial, you have a septic system issue, they do restaurant grease trap service, Metro Rooter same-day service, Saturday and Sunday included in that. The right people with the right equipment, and they've been serving Jacksonville since 1978. Love these companies that have been around for decades because they've been doing it right and earning your business for a long time. Visit MetroRooter.com if you've got any plumbing concerns. We hope you don't, but trust a company that's been in business for 36 years. 695-1911 is the number. 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Coming up next, we'll talk with John McClain, Houston Chronicle. We'll take a look at what the Texans have been up to this offseason. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hi, I'm Tom Jackson.
This is Shannon Sharp.
I'm Mike McCarthy. You're listening to 1010XL.
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 92.5 FM.
Tony, I'm a little disappointed, by the way. We figured out the theme. The theme is all Virginia-based. Music.
Artists or whatever.
Artists, yeah, what have you. And I really thought that Lauren would come out and support a team Vandy tonight, but instead.
Maybe tomorrow.
Maybe tomorrow. What if they lose, though?
It'll then I will not
commiserating
do that.
with Fat Vandy over here. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. Jaguars today live at Everbank Field. Let's welcome in John McClain, outstanding writer for the Houston Chronicle and all around good guy and an actor of some regard as well. What's up, John? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're fantastic, man. We're wondering in these parts. We hear a lot of noise about Andre Johnson in your neck of the woods. What's going on? We understand he's not showing up for anything, but how long does this situation linger, John, in your opinion?
Nobody knows because Andre hasn't talked since he initially said he wasn't going to come in. The way it's going to be resolved is he either reports or he doesn't. They're not going to guarantee anything on his contract. He's owed $10 million this year, $10.5 million next year, and $11 million the year after. He turns 33 in July. He's coming off two great seasons. And he'll show up at the latest when the big checks start the week of regular season. He'll make $548,000 a week and change. They'd like to see him show up at training camp, but I can't wait till he shows up because I'm going to say, what did you accomplish? If it was the same coach and the same quarterback and the same system, it'd be easier to understand. But the fact is he has a new coach, new system, new quarterbacks, new everything, and he hasn't done anything. Now, if he comes to start a training camp, he's got plenty of time to make it up. If he waits until the beginning of the regular season, they start against the Washington Redskins here, then it's going to be a while. He's going to, just like any player, when everything's new, doesn't matter how much experience or talent you have, it's going to take you a little while to learn it. So he'd be doing himself a disservice, team a disservice, fan a disservice, if he waits till the last minute.
The root of this, is it just dissatisfaction with the quarterback position right now, or is it the overall roster today doesn't feel like the Texans have done
enough
to improve?
Yeah, nothing to do with that whatsoever. Nothing to do with
that. What is it then?
What do you think? What is it?
It's money. Is it money?
It's always about the money. Always about it. When they say it's not about the money, it's always about the money. And there's a lot of speculation that he's worried about getting cut next year, salary being cut, when his cap figure is $16.1 million and wants it guaranteed. Well, his cap figure is $15.1 million this year, and they can carry him, and they're $13 million under the cap. So it's not an issue, but somebody's put a bug in his ear, and they're not doing anything. They redid his contract last time with 5 years left. I've never heard that. And they redid it, and he's made over $75 million here, and he's single. And he's done well with his money, I'm told. But if he comes in when camp starts, it won't be that big a deal. If he misses training camp, he's fined every day. He got fined almost $70,000 for missing the mandatory 3-day mini camp. But you know how that is. A lot of times they just let the fines go. But it's too bad because Bill O'Brien, the new coach, people are fired up about him and bouncing back from a 2-14 season. And he's all about competition and teamwork, and yet one of the two best players on the team hasn't been heard from.
John, I know you said that it's not about the quarterback position for Andre Johnson, but I think a lot of fans would understand if it was with what they currently have on the roster. Ryan Fitzpatrick named the starter for the Texans last week. Tom Savage is a guy they drafted. Are they good enough at quarterback to be competitive in 2014?
To be competitive, sure. What's competitive? 8-8. You know, then last year they lost 9 games by 7 or fewer points, and they lost a lot of players to injuries. The one player they missed the most was Arian Foster. He led the league in 2012 with 17 touchdowns. He had 2 last year. You take 15 touchdowns out of him, away from a team that loses 9 games by 7 and 5 by 4 or fewer with a quarterback who lost his confidence, and 4 Pro Bowlers down for the year, and 7 starters overall. Shouldn't be that hard to bounce back. All Ryan Fitzpatrick needs to do, he doesn't need to take him to the playoffs or the Super Bowl. He's a bridge quarterback, bridge between either Tom Savage, and they don't know if he can be the starter of the future, or somebody they draft in the first round next year. Bill O'Brien, Fitzpatrick was his handpicked guy to replace Matt Schaub. And the reason he wanted him this season is he thinks, after watching film of him at Buffalo and Tennessee, that he believes that they can get him to reduce his interceptions. They want him like Alex Smith did. Their model is to do what the Chiefs did. Chiefs were 2-14. They had new coach, new quarterback. They asked Alex Smith, manage the game. Don't win games. Had a good running game with Jamal Charles, and then played great defense built around their front 7 that played a 3-4. That's the exact MO they have here. When Fitzpatrick was a starter at Buffalo in 10, 11, and 12. He averaged 24 touchdowns and 16 interceptions. And a lot of those interceptions, based on what the film work showed, were in the fourth quarter when they were having to throw, when the weather was bad, and he was trying to force balls in that he couldn't make the throw in November and December. He made in September and October, and then a few were the fault of the receivers. So they believe here where the conditions are good, that good coaching, and a good example of that would be if you have a 20-yard out in one of his progressions here when the weather's fine and he can make that throw, but you go to Pittsburgh in November and that day the wind is swirling off of the rivers, then you don't put that in the game plan. You tell, change that. You make throws that he's capable of making. And so they think with coaching, discipline, situations, run the ball a lot, that they can get his interceptions down. I'll believe it when I see it, because some people have called him Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh, we'll use that, I have a feeling, somewhere down the line. John McClain, Houston Chronicle. John, when Tony and I talked with you in New York prior to the Super Bowl, you were convinced at the time that Blake Bortles would be the pick. You felt he was the best quarterback, and you thought ultimately that's where the Texans would land. They obviously went with Jadeveon Clowney. In retrospect, now that it's all said and done, do you think they made the right choice for their organization?
Well, I had Blake Bortles in my first mock draft. In my last six, I had Jadeveon Clowney, and I had Clowney the last 6 weeks. So I said if they took a quarterback, I thought it would be Bortles over Manziel, because Manziel plummeted for a lot of teams, and one reason is you see what he's doing off the field. That scared a lot of teams that that's exactly what he was going to do. And a lot of people were surprised that the Jaguars took Bortles because they did such a great job of hiding their interest. And I thought it was a great deal for him and them. I would love to have seen him come here because when you look at him, and he just looks and sounds like an NFL quarterback. One of the things I liked was before the draft, NFL stats and information, one of their writers did a study using their information of the top quarterbacks, what they did in certain situations in college. And Bortles was the best against a rush of five or more. And the worst was Derek Carr. Bortles completed, I believe it was 50-something percent against five or more pass rushers. And you know, every rookie quarterback's going to see more than five rushers. And Carr was the worst. That's why I hear people thinking Derek Carr is going to start as a rookie. I'll be stunned, because he was going up against the lesser of the competition of all the top quarterback prospects. But so Bortles could handle that. I was at his pro day, and I remember talking to so many NFL people about how impressed they were. And I remember being in George O'Leary's office 2 weeks in a row when I was over there talking to him about Bortles, as well as two of his former coaches, Bill O'Brien and George Gotsi, Texans quarterbacks coach. And I really enjoyed that. And Bortles just seemed to me, just every time you looked at him, he just looked like a big time quarterback. And as an alum of Baylor, watching him destroy Baylor in the Fiesta Bowl, I'll never like him because of that, but I wouldn't have minded having him meet the covering him, because a guy that big can run like that. I asked some Baylor people, did you never watch any film of Blake Bortles? Did you never see that the guy could run? He ran for 99 yards. He threw for three, ran for one, and they beat Baylor, I think it was 52-42. So I became, even though he broke my heart, I became a Blake Bortles fan during the Fiesta Bowl. And now I'm going to get saved two times a year.
Yeah, there certainly are a lot of Bortles fans here in Jacksonville already, John. And Jadeveon Clowney, I know he had the surgery for the sports hernia. How is he on his recovery? Is he expected to be ready for training camp when it opens?
Well, when he came back, he had the surgery on a Thursday. He came back from a Friday. The mini camp was the next week. He obviously couldn't compete in it, but he was interviewed, and they said, will you be ready for training camp? He said, I don't know. And taking this one day at a time. So everybody writes stories like it's the end of the world. Clowney may not be ready to start a training camp. his head is spinning because he's gone from playing a defensive end with his hand in the ground going forward all the time to playing outside linebacker in a 3-4 on the weak side. Now, they're not going to ask him to drop much in coverage, probably 1% of the time, but he still has to learn it just in case. But once he makes the adjustment to rushing where he's standing up, he could drop down. They have one formation where J.J. Watt's playing right in, and he's rushing outside of him. So having those two guys next to each other, you think if you're left tackle, the tight end's going to have to go over there. Probably the back's going to have to cheat to that side because you're going to need three people blocking those two guys. So they have a lot of possibilities. And he, like any other rookie's head, is spinning. But especially when you're asked to do something you've never done, they believe he's got the athleticism to do it. So far, they say they're happy with him. But he did end up missing three-day minicamp, two OTAs. No matter how much you put into it mentally, when you physically miss those, it puts you behind.
John, the team also drafted Lewis Nix out of Notre Dame in the third round, which is later than some people thought he would go. From what you've seen and from what the team has talked about, it's difficult to judge linemen in non-contact, but did they get a steal, or were there reasons, legitimate reasons he fell that late?
I think one of the legitimate reasons is, in college, they don't have true 3-4 nose tackles anymore because they're running spread offense all the time. And in the NFL, when they go to multiple receivers, the nose tackle comes out. So he was available in the bottom of the third round. They traded back to get him because he's 6'2", 332. And a lot of people had him going in the first round. I had him going in the first round. So they think, based on what they've seen, if he keeps his weight under control, that not only could he be the nose tackle, he might be part of the rotation at defensive tackle in a four-man front. So he might bring more than just your typical one-down, two-gap nose tackle. And but he had a knee problem early in OTAs, came back, worked hard. But as you said, we're not going to know for sure until they see him. But they need him to produce because the guy they got at nose tackle is named Jarrell Pope. He was at Kansas City, didn't start, came here because Romeo Crennel had drafted him. But Nix better produce and he better start or they're going to be in trouble.
John, a lot of people have talked about the talent on the roster in Houston, and this is a team that halfway through two seasons ago looked like they may be the best team in the AFC. And we've talked a lot about, are they a quarterback away? Are they a pick away? What do you believe the ceiling for the 2014 Houston Texans is?
I would say the ceiling would be 8-8, maybe 9-7. The schedule's not nearly as difficult as last year. Despite losing Arian Foster, Brian Cushing, Owen Daniels, and Matt Schaub losing his confidence and playing Case Keenum for 8 games, they led Indianapolis, Denver, and New England in the fourth quarter before they blew the games, and that was 3 division champions. They lost by 1 at Kansas City with Case Keenum. So they lost all these close games. They lost 2 to the Jaguars. And they're hoping, of course, injury is going to take a toll, but they're hoping that if they run the ball well with Foster, who's still 27 and having most of last year off, may actually benefit him this year. They're hoping he can stay healthy and they can run the ball, that they're going to play really good defense. Last year, they were ranked 6th in defense, but they only forced 11 turnovers, the fewest since the merger. And it was 18 fewer than the year before. So they just didn't force turnovers. And one reason is they only had one pass rusher in J.J. Watt. So they're hoping the defense will improve, that they will force some turnovers, and that the offense will not turn it over with Pickpatrick. And then that will help them win some of those close games. Bill O'Brien's going to hit a lot. He's already said he's going full contact. First day it's legal in camp, which is the third day of camp. And then they have practices against Atlanta and Denver. He wants his players tough. And the way you make them tough is you make them hit. Gary Kubiak never made them hit in camp.
John McClain, Houston Chronicle. Certainly nobody here in Jacksonville wishing the Texans the best of anything, John, as you can understand. We encourage folks, though, if they want to know more about your team that you cover and the NFL at large, follow you on Twitter, at McLean underscore on underscore NFL, and you can be like 75,000 of your closest friends and follow.
I need all the followers I can get. I appreciate it. I hope fans are fired up about the Jaguars. Everybody thinks you got a good coach getting Bortles. Nothing like getting a quarterback in the first round, especially high, especially a guy might as well be local, is getting fans fired up. And I was pumped about the two receivers they got. So things are really looking up for the Jaguars.
We are optimistic. Got to get some results on the field. John, always appreciate your time, man. Enjoy the summer. We'll talk to you down the road.
Anytime, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
You got it, buddy. John McClain, Houston Chronicle, where he's been covering the Texans and Houston sports in general for a better part of 3.5 decades now. So we appreciate him stopping by. We'll take a quick time out. We'll come back. Some comments on that. Plus, your reaction to our question of the day, which was, when you think of players whose careers were ended way too early, which is the guy that really springs most to mind for you? We've got a great sampling of responses to that. And if you want to get in, still time for that as well at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, it's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
2 hours spent on two things, your Jags and the rest of the NFL. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now,
I didn't know Pharrell was from Virginia.
Is he from Virginia? Is that, or is Lauren just predicting that everyone's going to be happy when the Cavaliers stomp
it.
The Commodores?
Stop it.
Tonight, Fat Bandy. I love, too, Fortunato came up with earlier, when the Cavs do win, hashtag Shut Up Vandy. Can rival Shut Up
Ripping
Randy.
Ripping on our Shut Up Randy.
We got a few Shut Up Randys, if you missed the story
earlier.
That's one of Lauren's mom's friend's husbands who got told to shut it when Lauren came on the radio, despite the fact that he was complaining about his recent surgery that he was being picked up at the hospital for. So, shut up, Randy. Lauren Brooks is a star here. Back off. All right, today, Tony, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight.
Yeah.
I think I've misquoted my own question several times. Who tops your list of NFL players whose careers ended way too early? Concise, got it, to the point. And the picture I used, when I always post these on Facebook and then retweet them, but the picture I used on Facebook today was of Tavian Banks' football card from back in the day. Certainly in Jaguar lore, he's one of the guys that we've always wondered, what if? What do we get today on Twitter?
Here's what we got on Twitter from Chris Baselli, most dominant offensive lineman I have ever watched. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag I like free stuff. Don't we all, Chris? From Brandon.
Love free stuff.
Number one, Barry Sanders. Number two, Jim Brown. Three, Bo Jackson. Four, Gale Sayers. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Tommy Boy, Bo Jackson. From Dr. G, Derek Thomas. I think that's the only mention I saw, at least, of Derek Thomas. From Sean, Barry Sanders and James Stewart. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From I Don't Know, Bo Jackson. From Jaguars Today, we got Randy Moss. Hashtag Shut Up Randy. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Eric, great question. By injury, Bo Jackson. By choice, Barry Sanders. By Jaguars, Tony Baselli. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Jason, Bo Jackson was my favorite as a kid. I became a Jag fan, and the second coming of Bo was Fred Taylor. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Matt, we got first name that pops in my head. What the heck?
What's going on over there?
It's Sean Taylor. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Ocho Fisho, Jags, Tony Baselli. Overall, in my lifetime, probably Joe Delaney from the Chiefs. And finally, from Duval Doom, Bo and Bo. Bo Jackson and Bo Selly.
Joe Delaney, correct me if I'm wrong. I just go marching into these things without thinking. But he drowned saving a child from drowning. Didn't he? Or a child?
Yes.
There was a child who's drowning. Is the cat going to moon us right now? Get your camera ready. Seriously, get your camera ready because the cat. I don't think he can hear us. He's getting ready. He's getting his little step stool out. Let's do this, man. Get your camera ready. And I'm going to tweet the cat's backside here. Oh, you see? Ah, yeah. I have him now. He quickly ran away from the window. Come on, cat. Go ahead. Show us the moon. It's okay. Jackson DeVille thought he'd take advantage of our new bay window here in the studio. See, and we see how you're rolling. That's right. That's right. We're nasty like that. And that on the heels. I was trying to tell a touching story about Joe Delaney.
I know.
and a cat who, unbeknownst to him, came in right at that moment. But that's a sad tale. The guy, who do you think of mostly when that question was asked today? What was the first guy that popped into your mind?
I had a list of guys that I went through. Obviously, Tony Baselli, because locally, that's a guy who probably would be a Hall of Famer if he had three or four more healthy years in the National Football League. I obviously thought of Gale Sayers. Robert Edwards is a name that I didn't see.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But he was a super talented guy coming out of Georgia, and his career was cut short after 3.5 seasons, maybe 4.
It wasn't too many.
Yeah, maybe 4 years in the league. But the
guy, he came back, right? I mean, because he was cut short, right?
He wasn't the same.
He ended up with Miami.
Yeah, he wasn't near the same guy.
No, he was, as a rookie, he was like, I want to say like 1,200, 1,400 yards or something like that.
But the easy answer for me, the best athlete maybe of our lifetime, Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, as short as his career was, it's almost Paul Bunyan. Like, the stories that you hear about Bo and the things that he was able to do on an athletic field, he was just unbelievable. And to only have 4 years of Bo Jackson in the NFL is sad.
By the way, somebody brought up Dwight Stevenson. I don't think they used the hashtag. I don't know if they got their question read. But regardless, Dwight Stevenson started, I believe, fewer games than Tony Baselli. And he's in the Hall of Fame. And he's an offensive lineman. He's clearly a dominant offensive lineman. We've compared these guys before. I think it was on either Baselli or Dwight Stevenson's birthday, whoever it was. Probably Dwight Stevenson. And I think he made, I want to say, maybe one more Pro Bowl or all NFL team than Tony did. But their career accomplishments in that regard, what they are recognized for,
sure,
were almost identical. And I don't think anybody questions how good he was. Dwight Stevenson played for a Miami team, which was, you know, certainly more high profile than even when the Jags were winning. They weren't as high profile probably as when Dwight Stevenson was playing for the Miami Dolphins. But regardless, also got a number of Barry Sanders on Facebook here, Joel Swanson, our own Tony Baselli, bunch of Tony Baselli's. Kevin Tappy went with Michael Cheever, his birthday was just this week as well.
Yeah.
His career ended way too early. Who knows what would have happened if he had made it. There may not have been a Brad Meester. True. Hashtag pandering for a shirt. If you had used the other hashtag, you might have gotten it.
Right.
Use the hashtag Jaguars today. And it's easier for us to sort that way.
I get the whole Barry Sanders thing. I mean, he walked away when he was still a very effective player.
Right, but he played a decade.
Yeah, he played 10 years, and he retired when he was 30. I mean, that's a long time to play in the National Football League. But I get it. Barry Sanders was my favorite player at the time of the National Football. I mean, he was electrifying to watch. He still had that quickness that he had always had in his career. There was no reason for him to walk away. He just decided it was time. So maybe we got robbed of two or three more years of the greatness of Barry Sanders, but it was on his timetable and instead of ours.
And you know, Jim Brown likewise walked away when he could still get it done. But at least Jim Brown had used his talents to then drop grenades down the smokestacks on the Nazis.
Heck yeah.
Of course, that was only, you know, the Dirty Dozen, but nevertheless, it was a great use of his open field running ability.
No doubt.
I thought, and a very memorable scene for him. Go. Here's what I used to do in the National Football
Much better
League.
Than his cameo in Mars Attacks.
All right, so today we got a lot of great feedback on that, and it really, Jerome Brown got me thinking about that because today's the anniversary of his fatal car crash that not only killed himself, but as we remember, his 12-year-old nephew. At the time, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships brings you the Fan Feedback Spotlight, and that includes Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, Tom Bush Mini, serving all of you here in the greater Jacksonville area. Visit TomBush.com for more information when you're in the market for your next new or pre-owned vehicle, and follow them on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors. Wrapping up today, thanks to Luke Bowanko, who I didn't bring up the Bro-wanko. One day we'll tell the full Bro-wanko story when Warren allows us to. And it'll be a hell of a shut up Randy kind of day. Let me just say that.
Aye, aye, aye.
John McClain from the Houston Chronicle as well. I told you a few minutes ago before we came back, major milestone for the boy yesterday. Broke out the Risk board for the first time.
Sweet.
Yeah. We jumped straight from Sorry and Clue up to Risk. We were playing Sorry. His mom wasn't playing Cutthroat enough, so I had had enough. So we were playing Clue, and Clue is just boring. I'm sorry. It's just a boring game. And so I dug out the Risk board for the first time in 15 years, maybe. It's been a long time since I was able to coax my wife into playing. My kid now has dreams of a global domination.
Sweet.
Woke up today, came in, said, daddy, because we left the board set up. You know, the game never ends, practically. It's like Monopoly. It goes on almost forever. He goes, daddy, China's going down. So he is right now probably marching his Mongolian horde into China as
we
speak.
Very cool. I think I had three versions of Risk.
You had Risk, you had Castle Risk.
I didn't have Castle Risk.
The Ottoman Risk. Empire kind of stuff.
I had, like, the future one, which was, like, 2021 or something like that.
Oh, dear. Risk 2021. Did the United States survive?
Yeah, you could go to the moon in that game, though. And I had Lord of the Rings Risk. There's
Lord
a big
of the
shock.
Rings Risk.
Yep.
The Risk video game for the PlayStation let you play. I still have it, but it doesn't play like on my. I have a PS3.
Uh-huh.
It certainly doesn't play on that. It may play on my old PS2. But I'm not sure, but you can play the Native American territories, like the Blackfoot, you know, territory and all that stuff.
That's cool.
Love that game. Geeked up, baby.
That's cool. Yeah. Geeked up. Get them in. That's fun.
You got Risk and you combine that with video games. What could be better? You know, 24 hours from now, you'll be jetting to some locale.
I will.
To take in.
I'll be gone.
Team USA.
Be gone.
So,
good
luck.
Hopefully I'll be in a good mood while I'm leaving after whatever's going
to
happen.
Good luck
tonight
to my Cavaliers tonight. Appreciate
happens.
That.
Come on, Carson Fulmer.
Good luck to you, Virginia. Love you. You know, grew up in the mean streets of Norfolk, as we all know. I'm such a liar. I'd like to say good luck to Vandy, but you know I wouldn't mean it. So I enjoy more others' pain and suffering.
Apparently. I don't know why you would revel in the suffering of Vanderbilt fans.
I don't know. I think it's funny.
That's a ridiculous thing.
You know, I have nothing in my own life that's good, apparently, so I must take comfort in the suffering of others.
We've got nothing.
Other than my family, which is phenomenal. And, of course, everyone associated with Jaguars today. We're done. XL Primetime coming up next. For Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, for Lauren Brooks, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Metro Rooter. They bring you the show every Wednesday, 695-1911, or visit them at metrorooter.com. XL Primetime next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.